Hi, this is Kevin Conroy, and you're listening to the GeekCast Radio Network.
Surprised that I lived so long.
Batman, Bruce Wayne. Bruce Wayne, Batman. Or have you met?
Not now.
Great. What did they used to call it? Stereo?
2012 marks the 20th anniversary of Batman the Animated Series. Hello and welcome to Legends of the Dark Knight. I am one of your hosts, TFG and Mike, and joining me is Steve Megatron. Hello.
Hello.
In this Legends of the Dark Knight interview, we welcome the man who has voiced Bruce Wayne and Batman 21 times in the last 20 years, Mr. Kevin Conroy. Hello, Kevin. How are you?
Hey, how you doing?
Pretty good. Before we get started, give us the scoop on what's going on in the world of Kevin Conroy. Any upcoming projects you care to reveal, or any upcoming projects that you actually can reveal?
Well, that's the problem. Until they're ready to advertise them, I'm not really supposed to say anything. But yeah, I've done another direct-to-video movie and another game. But I let it slip in one interview about the direct-to-video movie, and I got really in trouble. So I'm not allowed to say anything until they come out. But there's more product about to be released. Yeah.
Oh, sweet!
Awesome. So getting into general information, where did you grow up?
I was born on Long Island and grew up in Connecticut, in Westport. I moved into New York City when I was 17 and got a scholarship to go to Juilliard and stayed in New York from then on. Got an apartment and started supporting myself, working in restaurants and doing theater work. And have been working in the theater and television ever since. So I've been on my own since I was about 17. And I consider myself a New Yorker, even though I grew up in Connecticut.
Have you always known that you wanted to be an actor or voice actor?
I knew I wanted to be an actor. The voice acting I literally stumbled into, because when you work in the theater in New York, you know, theater is great. I love it, but there's not a lot of money involved. So everyone who works at night on the stage either is doing television work during the day or films in between plays, that kind of thing. You always have to supplement it. And I got exposed to the fact that a good way of doing it in New York was commercial voiceovers. And I stumbled into that just by luck and started making money doing voiceovers in New York. And so when I moved to L.A. to do a series, my voiceover agent said, oh, well, while you're out there, you know, they're putting together this new animated series, Batman. Why don't you go over and, you know, give it a shot? I'd never done any animated voices before.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to Warner Brothers and met them. And my experience had only been the Adam West Batman sort of campy TV show from the 70s. And they said, oh, no, that's not the way this is going to be at all. And they described Bruce Timm. They described to me the Dark Knight legend and the series, the sort of canon, you know, the book. And so I just put myself in my imagination in the booth, a kid who'd lost both his parents, was one of the richest men in the world, had devised this alternate reality. And was living to avenge their deaths. What would, you know, what kind of person would that sound like? And I gradually got into a sort of a huskier and raspier and a a more secretive voice, void, a place, and that sound came out. Mm. So it was just a very lucky situation that I happened to be called in to audition for it, and I happened to make the right choice.
Did you audition for any other roles in the series, or was it just, did they just want you for that role?
That's what they wanted me for, but they were looking at literally hundreds and hundreds, if not 1,000 people for the voice of Batman. They looked at a lot of people for a long time. Mm. And it was a big search. And luckily I didn't know that. I was really naive about what was going on. If I'd known that, I probably would have been way too nervous and have blown it. But I actually went in because, you know, actors always want to be stretched and want to do things outside the box and that are, you know, a little unusual. So I actually asked if I could read for Bullock and some of the other character voices. Mm-hmm. And they let me read for them, but, you know, there was no way they were going to use me for those voices. But they said, no, we're interested in Batman. They don't understand. He'll be in every episode. It'll be all about him. Wouldn't you rather do that character? And I did audition for other things for the role. And periodically, they will use me for other voices in episodes because there's a union regulation in the business where they can use a book actor for up to 3 voices in one episode without paying him any more money. You're paid by the booking session.
Right.
And in that session, they can actually use you for 3 different voices. After that, they have to pay you as an extra actor, you know, for more.
Right.
So they always try and get people to do more than one voice because it saves them money on bodies. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I've periodically done cops or, you know, delivery men or, you know, smaller characters that have just a few lines because my voice has become so identifiable with Batman that it's harder to mask from the audience. And they don't want to confuse people by thinking, hey, wait a minute, you know, why does Batman have the voice of the delivery guy now, you know?
well, they don't use me a lot. Yeah.
Huh?
Well, that's what a lot of people never really realized. You are, your voice, your regular voice, is the first thing people ever hear in the very first episode on Leather Wings. You played the helicopter police pilot.
That's right. Exactly.
You know, and a lot of people never, they just kind of gloss over that and they never really notice that until, you know, so we actually hear you before we ever see Batman.
Exactly. And there have been other little roles that they'll just, you know, because it saves them a whole salary for another actor.
Yeah.
So, and that's what I always tell people when they say, you know, how do you get into the business? I've been told I have a good voice. What should I do about it?
Right.
And my advice is always, you know, look, having a good voice is half the battle. You've got to have a variety of voices because they don't want to book someone just for one voice. They want to book someone who can do a lot of different sounds, a lot of different voices, because that's where they save their money. That's where they make their money. And some of these guys who work in the voiceover business are unbelievable, the variety of voices that they can come out with.
Oh, yeah. People like Billy West and...
Exactly, exactly. You
know, Rob Paulson and Maurice LaMarche and all that stuff.
Exactly.
You know, Tara Strong, it's so weird with her because she can do both girl and boy voices, and that's just kind of so wrong if you really think about it.
I know, it's so wrong. I know. I know, she's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And Phil Lamar. I mean, he's got, you know, a really wide range of voices. A lot of these people just, it's really impressive.
It is.
Jumping into some of the, since we're already on the Batman subject, what were the recording sessions like with all the great voice actors that were in the series?
That was really, the fact that the recording sessions were going to be so much fun and so interesting was kind of gravy. I had no idea that, none of us had any idea that the show was going to take off the way it did.
Right.
And because of that, and because of the fact that Warner Brothers and Andrea Romano really like to get everybody in the booth together, they like an ensemble read, because you get a good interaction with people. You just get a different performance Some other studios like to get individual voices in the booths alone, because then you get a very clean tape technically, and post-production's a lot easier. Mm-hmm. But you don't get the kind of performances you get when it's an ensemble read. So Andrea and Warner Brothers really like to get everybody in the booth together. And these casts that she was putting together were so interesting. There were some really wonderful actors, and the scripts were good, and the bookings got to be... Everyone, word got out that it was a lot of fun to do Batman, and that we were having great sessions. So the booking sessions got to be a blast. And I felt a sense of responsibility, since I was the one voice that linked all the shows together. I was the one constant, that mm-hmm. whenever they bring in guests, often the people they bring in, actors from television or film, had never done voiceovers before. And so you want to... I felt an obligation to sort of put them at ease and make them feel welcome, and maybe show them a couple of tricks about turning the page without making any noise on the microphone. Little technical, studio.
And I'm sure there were tons of pranks as well.
Tons. But but Andrea, they appreciated that I would do that. So I found that an important feature of putting people at ease was humor. And, just keeping the atmosphere fun and light. So I kind of did a lot of pranks and a lot of goofy stuff that they let me get away with. Because they knew what I was doing. I was doing it intentionally to keep people loose. You know what I mean? Like, there was one thing where there's a lot of grunts and groans in Batman. I mean, half of my lines are battle lines and fight lines. I'm like, and one day I was doing a whole series of those. I was like, Andrea. I said the name of the director at the end of it, and the booth went crazy. And Andrea said it was a star. She said, that's the best sex I've ever had. So they recorded it, and they kept it on Andrea's outreel. And that got to be a thing that I got to do periodically. Whenever I would do a big, long fight sequence, at the end of it, there'd be a pause, and you'd hear Andrea Romano come over the boom and say, and now you say... and I'd say, oh, Andrea...
That's so funny. Now, have you you already mentioned that you grew up with the 66 Batman and all that stuff, and how, that series was campy, but it's still great, because if it's your first introduction to the character, that's always great growing up with something like that. Have you ever gone back and watched the old Batman or Justice League episodes from the cartoons?
I haven't in years. But when I have, it's amazing how they're like little stage plays.
They are.
And it's so bizarre. I mean, there's no special effects of any kind. They're like little stage plays, each one. And but they get these great actors. There are some really good stage actors in those things. Jose Ferrer or Julie Newmar. Remember her?
Yep.
I mean, there were these wild performances in that thing.
The thing of the cartoons is, like, they, really, honestly, you got Lois, Batman got Lois Lane before Superman ever had her in BTIS, because you worked with Dana Delaney in Mask of the Phantasm.
Mask of the Phantasm, yeah.
Yeah.
And Dana, that was fun, because Dana, I had first met Dana, oh man, we were both in our 20s, so this is like 30 years ago, and she was just starting out in New York. I was doing a play for Joseph Papp at the Public Theater downtown, and I was working with a wonderful actress named Deborah Rush, and Deborah was a good friend of Treat Williams, the actor, and Treat, at that time, was dating Dana Delaney. And we all went to the theater one night, and he was bringing along this girl that he was dating. It was a young actress just starting out. It was Dana Delaney. So, it's so much fun when your careers cross paths again decades later, She's a terrific actress, and she's a lot of fun to work with.
I just love how Bruce Timm was able to tap into stuff that people wouldn't normally know about you, like your amazing singing voice in this little piggy, you know, because that moment for me in Justice League Unlimited, it was like when Cersei said, "I want something from you that no one, you know, that you can never get back." And of course, the entire audience is like, "What is she talking about?" And then all of a sudden, you go into "I Am I Blue," and it was like, "Oh my god!"
I know, it's so funny. Awesome. When I saw that in the script, I said to Andrea, "I said, are we really doing this?" She said, "Well, there's a lot of debate in Warner Brothers right now whether we should. Would Batman sing? You know, will this be really cool and the fans will love it, or will this like completely blow the image?" You know, and they decided to go with it. And
I think by that point,
it was fun. Oh, the fans loved it. Are you kidding? Yeah. And it worked. It worked great.
Yeah.
But you know, you always wonder when you're gonna do something as outside the box as that is, whether it's gonna work or not. And luckily, it did. Oh, people mention it all the time.
Yeah.
When I go to the Comic Cons and stuff, I was just in Dallas a couple of weeks ago at a Comic Con, and people were saying, "Oh, would you sing Am I Blue?"
Wow. That's funny. So, what were you going to say, Steve?
Well, I was going to say, being that the show was that established by that point with all of the characters and the voices, the fans are always looking for something else that pushes the envelope into some new territory.
Exactly.
To kind of keep it fresh. So,
and that's actually, I think that's actually why Bruce and Paul stopped doing the show, ultimately. It's not because the audience didn't want it, or the studio didn't want it, or the actors didn't want it. Everyone wanted more of Batman the Animated Series. They just ran out of ideas. They ran out of things. They needed to recharge their batteries on something else. They needed to think about something else for a while. So it really wasn't because the plug was pulled on that show.
Right.
Really the creators just kind of, they got burned out.
Yeah.
You think about all the ideas they have to come up with, you know, in this.
Well, it's 108 episodes. I mean, that's a lot to accomplish.
Exactly.
You know, it's 108, 109 episodes, and that, you
know. It's over 100.
Yeah. I would have to say, out of, like, when you guys got to, like, the revamp episodes, the new adventures episodes, my two favorites out of that is Over the Edge and Old Wounds. Just because I thought they were such great stories that just wrote themselves. Because Over the Edge was the one where Barbara had the dream where she died because of the Scarecrow, and you and Robin and Commissioner Gordon was hunting you guys down and everything else. It was just such a great, great episode.
I don't know how they come up with some of these ideas, to tell you the truth. But they do. They're very bright guys. One of the funniest things that happened was when the LA riots happened.
Mm-hmm.
The fires started overnight, and I called my agents that morning. I said, "Well, the booking is obviously not going to happen today, so the city's in chaos." And they said, "No, we think you still have a booking. We haven't heard anything's been canceled. We'll call over at Warner Brothers," because often, you know, you don't necessarily record on the lot because there's so much going on the lots. And our show usually recorded off lot at a place called the Rowena Studio, which is in Hollywood. And
right.
it's actually on the eastern edge of Hollywood. So it was very near, it was much closer to where the fires were and where the looting was going on. So I'm driving to the booking that morning, and all the traffic is going the other way. Everyone is leaving that part of the city. And as I'm driving, it's getting sootier and sootier and, you know, smokier and smokier. I'm thinking, this is ridiculous. This can't be happening. But this was, I think it was in 93, wasn't that? Or 90, it's like, I think it was 93 was the LA riot. So, you know, no one had cell phones yet. And I had no way to call my agents. And I'm thinking, well, I've been told I have to go. So I felt like an idiot driving into the smoke. I get to the studio, and everybody was there. And he said, Andrea, is this crazy? And she said, oh, no, we'll be fine. It's, you know, the studio's safe, and we'll be fine in here. And every time the door opened, we tried to start recording the show, every time the door opened with another actor arriving, a new waft of smoke would come into the studio. And they'd have to turn on the air conditioners to clear it all out again. And then as the morning went on, we were saying, this is really getting dangerous in here. It was getting smokier and smokier. So finally they let us all go home. I said, guys, this is going to go down in the history books. This is the craziest booking I've ever come to. So we'd never got the show recorded. We all left. And of course, you know, all that day, that part of LA burnt.
Yeah.
It was crazy. It was crazy.
And then after you had gone to do some cooking duties after the 9/11 tragedy to help out in New York. You want to tell that story?
You want me to tell that story?
Sure.
It's got a lot of foul language in it. Should I clean it up?
No, that's fine.
Oh, we are so explicit here at the Geekcast Radio Network.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay. Well, you know, I live in New York. I live in New York, and after the attack, everyone wanted to help. I mean, the thing that was amazing, you always see those pictures of everyone running away from the buildings as they were coming down with the covered with soot. But what you don't see any pictures of is everyone running back. As soon as the dust cleared, people started running back to try and, you know, help people. And so I called. There was a number set up. Everyone was being told to go to the Javits Convention Center, and that's where they were coordinating the volunteers. So I went to the Javits Center, and they already had everybody they needed. They had such a huge turnout. They said, look, we've got everyone. We have all the tunnelers. We have all the diggers. We have overwhelmed with volunteers. We don't need anybody. So I was feeling so dejected. I was on my way home thinking, what am I going to do? I want to help. And I stopped off at a coffee shop, and there was a guy there covered with dust who had just come from Ground Zero and said, he was talking to the waitress about how he was working in a kitchen there. And I said to him, this total stranger, I said, you know, I just came from the volunteer place. They told me they didn't need anybody anymore. He said, do you really want to volunteer? I said, yeah. So he wrote down this phone number. He said, call this number. They need people. This is the kitchen at Ground Zero. So I called them up, and they said that they did need people. And they said, do you have any restaurant experience? I said, I'm an actor. Of course I have restaurant experience. What do you need? You know, actors can do anything in a restaurant. They said, well, we really need cooks. I said, well, I worked in a short order cook when I was going through Juilliard. They said, are you free now? And I said, yeah, I'm between jobs. They said, no, we mean right now, like tonight. We need someone tonight. I said, yeah, I'll be right there. So I ended up doing the night shift. So it was like from 6 p.m. to about 6 a.m. And it was a few blocks away from the actual pit. But it was a big, big, like, cafeteria that they had commandeered. It was a restaurant, I think, called Nino's. It was a big old restaurant. And they had taken it over, and all the work crews would come in covered with dust and soot, just exhausted. And it was a very hot September. So it was a very depressing atmosphere. And there were these huge work lights set up all over Lower Manhattan, setting it up. It looked like a moonscape. Because it was a big search site, and people would come in, and there was just a sort of rumbling kind of melancholy mumble going on, because, you know, everyone was so overwhelmed by what had happened. And I was working this night shift, and this guy who was next to me one night goes, so I'm an architect during my day job. What's your day job? I said, well, I'm an actor. He said, yeah, but do you do some special kind of acting? He said, I thought I knew your name. I said, well, I really work in animation. I do voices. He said, I knew it. You're Batman. I said, how did you know that? He said, everybody knows who's Batman. I said, no, everyone does not know who's Batman. He said, oh, my God, the guys are going to go crazy if I tell them that. I said, no one's going to care. He said, are you crazy? He said, watch. So he goes out in the dining room, and he goes, guys, you're not going to believe who's been cooking your dinners. It's Batman. And there was this long pause, and you hear it from the back of the auditorium. Bullshit! And then someone else says, make him prove it! So I'm back in the kitchen, right, in this big, echoey kitchen, and I do, I am vengeance. I am the night. I said, I am Batman! And then there's this long, long silence. You hear it from the back of the auditorium. Holy fuck, that is Batman. They all start pouring back into the kitchen, and suddenly you hear this laughter. And this guy's like, hey, you know that episode where you and the Joker, you know, I watch that show all the time with my kids. And, you know, hey, man, what's that Dana the Lady like? And everyone wanted to know everything about the show. And then the guy who had recognized me, the architect, says, what's it like to be Santa Claus? Because that's what happened. Santa Claus just got here. And it was true. It was like suddenly people had something else to think about, you know.
Yeah.
And so I emailed Andrea the next morning at Warner Brothers, and I told her what had happened that night. I wrote it all as a story. And I said at the end of it, you know, what we do is not insignificant. We're already contributing. And she said she circulated that all around Warner Brothers. She said everybody at Warner Brothers loved that story.
Yeah. It's so, just an amazing story because, you know, a lot of, you know, and that goes to like, you know, sometimes we will ask a question of, you know, do you get recognized, you know, on this? Because a lot of times voice actors, you know, in person don't get recognized unless, you know, you're at a convention and a big sign says, hey, this is Kevin Conroy voice. You know, I mean,
I assumed this would be a completely anonymous job. And for many years it was, you know, in the early 90s, no one knew what I was doing. It was when the internet developed and you could, you know, you could just Google someone's name and then get the picture. And suddenly everyone knew who was Batman. You know, it's really since the internet that people know who's doing what. And for many, many years, it was completely anonymous. And I was used to it that way. I kind of liked it that way, actually. So it's interesting, though, now, with everyone knowing, you know, who's doing what.
Yeah, it's very, very awesome.
Anything else I can tell you?
What are some of the voice actors that influenced you while you were kind of going through school and going through into different sessions?
Boy, that's a hard one because I've really been exposed to everybody. The real pros like Ron Paulson and the really incredibly young, talented people like Phil Lamar. And people who are amazingly flexible, like Tara Strong. The most important thing I think I learned was keeping it real, because the trend has been away from quote-unquote cartoony sounds, and Batman really set that trend.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, the thing to learn was to keep it very real, but you only have your voice to tell the story. So you've got to goose it a little. So there's this fine line you walk between goosing it because you only do have your voice to tell it, but not becoming quote unquote cartoony. Mm-hmm. And that's just something I have to feel on my own. But, but it's so interesting too, because, you know, in over the last 10, 15 years, there's something called stunt casting in Hollywood, where they stunt casting is where they book a movie star or a, you know, some kind of celebrity into a role just because of the name recognition. It has nothing to do with whether they're any good at the role or not. They're usually not very good at the role, but you know, it's a stunt. It's a way of promoting the show usually, and you've had a lot more of that going on in the last 10 or 15 years. So we've had a lot of people come onto the show who had never done any kind of voice work before.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting. Some of them take to it and do great, and others really, really can't do it. It's interesting to watch someone not get it. Because it looks like it would be easy. It's not as easy as it looks. It's interesting. I mean, I've had bookings where they've worked with someone and worked with someone and worked with someone and worked with someone. And Andrea is great at working with people without having them, you know, get embarrassed, because it's terrible. You don't want to humiliate someone. And she's worked and worked and worked. And at the end of the session, she'll say to me, Kevin, are you free this afternoon? Can you stay with us for a couple more hours? And I realized that they've had to book another actor to bring them in to re-record what that person couldn't do.
Right, yeah.
that's the danger when you bring in people who don't usually do it, is that they may not get it. You know, they may not be able to pull it off.
The other danger is, you know, those people who think they, you know, get $1 million for just doing their own voice. Chris Rock. All right. Switching over to some, because I know that you've done some on-camera work as well, you know, guesting in Murphy Brown, Cheers, Matlock, you know, you were in Dynasty, and you were also on another, was Another World, wasn't it? Or was it
Search for Tomorrow and Another World.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did Another World when it was an hour and a half long.
Oh,
wow. It was the only hour and a half soap. That was back in 1980.
Yeah,
I was just finishing the Broadway tour of Death Trap, and it was a national tour, and we were performing in Boston, and I got hired to do Another World, which was recording in New York. So I would record the show and then take the shuttle from New York and shoot up to Boston and make the curtain for the show that night. And then after the show, get the last shuttle back.
Yeah.
So I could go to the studio the next morning. I did that for a couple of months because it was the end of that tour, and I didn't want to lose this daytime job that was opened up.
Right.
So that was a crazy period, but it was unusual for an actor to feel that wanted. You know,
yeah.
To be commuting between two cities to do two jobs.
Yeah. Do you want to, you know, in the future, do you want to do more on-camera stuff, or are you content being, you know, the voice actor, the one that does animated series, video games, and also your play work as well? Are you still doing plays? Are you still...
I haven't actually done one in a while. The last one I did was for Arthur Miller, and that was a number of years ago. No, I've really been enjoying just doing the voiceover work. You know, all actors want to stretch and do different things, but...
Right.
I haven't been on camera now in so many years. It would be very hard to get back into that again, just because you go off people's radar.
Yeah.
So
what I find absolutely hilarious is that, you know, you say that, and yet your young ward, Mr. Lauren Lester there, pops up in almost every single... I mean, I've seen that guy in more TV shows in the last, I don't know, 6 months. Than anything.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
that's great.
He'll pop up in, you know, he popped up in an episode of Awake as some one-off character. He popped up in an episode, he's going to be popping up in an episode of a Disney Channel series called Good Luck Charlie, but I see him pop up everywhere, and as soon as I hear his voice, I'm like, oh yeah, that's right.
That's funny. Good for him. I'm glad for him. That's great.
Yeah, there was a trivia bit on IMDb that you had auditioned for the part of Joe Hacken on the NBC sitcom Wings. The producers spent about 2 weeks deciding between you and Tim Daly. And of course, obviously, you know, it's Batman versus Superman yet again. It was before you guys actually worked together on World's Finest for the Superman the Animated Series. I find that, I read that and I just laughed because I find that so hilarious that...
I know, it's funny. We did. It was down
between
the two of us, and they made it both of us test. And you know, when you test for a network for the executives, usually you just go in and you do a reading for a group of executives, and they make up their mind, and that's it. They usually bring in three or four different actors. You do this very nerve-wracking audition in the corporate offices, and then you're either hired or you're not. Well, we all went in and did these auditions for the executives. I think it was CBS. I think it was CBS. No, it was NBC.
NBC.
And they couldn't make up their minds. So they brought Tim and I back.
Yeah.
And we did all that again. They still couldn't make up their minds. So they asked us if we would do screen tests, which is very unusual for sitcoms, for a sitcom. So they brought us both to the studio and had us acting on the Cheers set, because it was the only set up at that studio, doing screen tests with Jim Burrows, who was directing the pilot for Cheers, for Wings. And they had actually brought me on to Cheers for a couple of episodes to work with me, to make sure that they wanted to work with me on Wings. Mm-hmm. So it was really a coin toss between the two of us. It could have gone, obviously, it could have gone either way. And he got it. What can you say? And he did well with it. But when they booked that episode, Andrea booked that episode for Tim and I to work together a couple of years later on World's Finest, he said, "Kevin, you can't have me work with Kevin Conley. That guy hates my guts." she said, "Look, I know Kevin. He doesn't hate anyone's guts. What's this about?" So he told her that whole story about Wings, and she said, "That is ancient history. He could care less. Are you kidding?" So we get along great. He's a great guy.
He's awesome.
Yeah. Out of the many animated and video games that you've done Batman in over the years, what has been your favorite out of all of them?
I always loved the episode.
Perchance to Dream.
Perchance to Dream. Yeah, that was always my favorite episode of the shows. But then, the game. Arkham Asylum is pretty amazing. And then Arkham City, the graphics are even more amazing. So those games are pretty awesome. But in terms of dramatic, storyline and acting, I always loved Perchance to Dream. But, you know, they've always topped themselves with each episode or each new thing. Like, I thought Mask of the Phantasm was incredible. And then Sub-Zero, the animation in Sub-Zero, that opening sequence of the paws of the polar bears running on the ice and looking at it from underneath the ice.
Yeah.
That's the opening visual from Sub-Zero. It's so awesome. That artwork is so awesome.
Yeah.
So each thing they do, it's been such a creative team. Each incarnation has had something phenomenal about it.
You know, the thing of, like, when it was airing, I just happened to turn on Kids WB at the time, and there, you know, I saw this title sequence of, I knew the visual, because it was that spinning Bruce Wayne head in Batman Beyond. I knew the visual was an old version of the Bruce Wayne character. I'm like, wait, what is this show? And I started watching Batman Beyond, I'm like, oh my God, how did he age his voice like that? Just so awesome. And the funny thing, the funniest part was later on when they got the Justice League Unlimited and they did the episode Once in Future Thing Part 2, when Will Friedle is like, "Bruce Wayne, Batman, or have you met?" And you're like, "Not now." But it's in stereo with your regular Batman voice and the old Bruce voice. It's like, how the hell? It's just so awesome.
It's really fun when you get to do stuff like that because it stretches you, you know. Those episodes were fun. I loved working with Will Friedle. He's a great guy.
Yeah, hopefully here on the podcast 1 week, because we're just now coming up to, I think the next episode we're going to review the Demon's Quest and a couple other whatever the next episodes are in the order. So once we get to Batman Beyond, we hope we can get Will on so we can talk
about
Batman Beyond as well.
Great. All right, well, I got to go.
You got to run.
Did you get enough?
I think we got enough.
Great.
Steve, did you have one other question you wanted to ask him to kind of close it out?
No, I think we pretty well covered it.
Great.
All right, so we would like to thank Mr. Conroy for taking the time to chat with us in this special Legends of the Dark Knight interview. It was such an honor to talk to you. We'll ask you to hold the line, and we'll be back after this.
What about the whole secret identity thing? I mean, I trust you guys, but I'm not sure I'm ready to...
Wally West, Clark Kent... Bruce Wayne.
Show off.
Red hair. It suits you.
You think?
Change now.
What's this do?
That's not helping.
I am vengeance. I am the night. I am Batman.
Batman. Batman.
There is a song the good folks sing.
Song the good folks sing.
Batman, about a hero on the wing.
Hero on the wing. Nightwing, Batman.
I am Gotham's darkest night, the villain's darkest fright. Turn on the signal light
for Batman.
Batman. Don't you?
Lighten up, it's your birthday.
Don't remind me.
Good work, Cape Crusader. Once again, you've saved our fair city from those vile miscreants.
They were no problem, Commissioner. For as we all know, criminals are a superstitious, cowardly lot. They plan and plot, but they always get caught.
Their evil schemes all come to naught. A superstitious, cowardly lot.
It took me weeks to get tickets for this show. It's Shway.
It's Schwarbage.
Excuse me. One side, please. Move!
A superstitious, cowardly lot. They plan and plot, but they always get caught. Their evil schemes all come to naught.
Gentlemen, it's been an honor.